The title of my talk is Quantum Codes Give Counterexamples to the Unique Free Image Conjecture of the End Representability Problem. Don't worry, I'll explain what it all means during the talk. Okay, so the basic idea is to represent an n-body state by its two-body reduced density matrix. Why might we want to do this? Well, all physical Hamiltonians come from at most two-body interactions, and each two-body term only sees the reduced density matrix. So the energy of a state in one of these Hamiltonians is completely determined by the two-particle RDM. Okay, so if we could just vary the reduced density matrix, we could find the ground states of Hamiltonians quickly, because it's a much more efficient representation. So why don't we just, find the lowest energy density matrix for a specific Hamiltonian? Well, there's a problem with that not all density matrices actually come from an n particle state. So, a fairly intuitive way to see this is for a three spin system, if you were to say, well, look at particles A and B, and they'll be both up, and look at particles B and C, they'll be both down. There's no three-particle distribution that will give you those two reduced distributions. So you could imagine, that could happen, or there could be many more subtle ways in which that could happen. So this brings us to the end representability problem, which asks what density matrices actually can come from some n-particle state. So we have the space of n particle states, then we have the partial trace, and it gives us a space of n representable two-body density matrices. So naively, if we were to vary over all density matrices, we might end up here, and we'll have no n particle state that actually gives us that density matrix. So the density matrix is called the image of the n-particle state, and an n-particle state that maps to a particular density matrix is called its pre-image. Okay, so if we could solve the n-representability problem, then we could simply vary over all reduced density matrices of n-particle states, and then solve for two-body Hamiltonians. Originally, there was a lot of effort that put into end representability, and there was a belief that it could be solved. However, not that much progress was made. It remained stagnant for a long time. Yes?
First, we need to solve over this set of reduced density matrices. And then the idea would be we could always find an actual state which gave us that guy.
Yes. Right. If it's n representable. However, it was shown in 2007 that deciding whether an arbitrary density matrix is n representable is QMA complete. So it would be hard even for a quantum computer to solve. So there's no hope of solving it exactly. So while there's no hope of solving it exactly, there are still things that we can do. Okay, so let's look at the space a little bit more. So they form a convex set. An easy way to see this is that we have n particle states which form a convex set. The average of two density matrices, n particle density matrices, is still a valid density matrix. And we have a linear mapping from the n particle states to the two particle states. A linear mapping of a convex set gives you another convex set. The energy is a linear function of both the reduced density matrix and the Hamiltonian. So we might as well just think of this as a dot product. So this is linear optimization, minimizing this function, when constrained to the set of density matrices that are actually n-representable. So because it's a linear optimization problem, if we actually knew what this set was, we could just go in the direction that of least energy when we hit an edge, slide along the edge, whatnot, but we'll never run into a local minimum. So there are, this is a common problem in computer science, whatnot. So, and one of the ways to attack this problem is to look at the extreme points. So these red, this blue circle is the set of N representable RDM. These red dots are the extreme points. So they're always unique lowest energy for some two-body state, for some two-body Hamiltonian, and they completely characterize the set. So given any other point in the set, you can write it down as some weighted average of extreme points of the set. Therefore, it's important in linear optimization because given any function you're trying to minimize, one of the lowest points will always be the extreme, will always be an extreme point. So the unique pre-image conjecture, in 1972, Erdahl conjectured that every extreme point uniquely determines the n-body state. So that goes back to the, you know, the idea of reconstruction. So it holds for all known points so far. Several classes of extreme points have been made. Also, intuition coming from quantum chemistry, where the Hamiltonians have this form of Laplacian plus a potential term, it seems very natural. Similar observations have been made for other systems. And also, it has been proven in special cases. Okay, so in this talk, we'll disprove the conjecture using quantum coding theory, which shows that we know actually very little about the set of extreme points, although it's much more varied than we had originally thought. Questions? Well, it was, so people have been making various classes of extreme points, and all of the extreme points so far have had this property. So a lot of it is empirical. Any other questions? I think it was also open for spin systems. I'll show, it turns out that they're both equivalent. I'll get to that later in the talk. Any other questions before we go forward?
All right.
Okay, so the roadmap is we'll first translate the conjecture into the language of two-body into the language of Hamiltonians. We'll then present a spin case, and then we'll map the spin case onto the fermionic case, disproving the conjecture, and then we'll build the connection to quantum coding theory. Okay, so let's translate into the Hamiltonian language. So consider we have a two-body Hamiltonian, which is degenerate, but the ground states can't be distinguished by two-body operators. So if all ground states can't be distinguished by two-body operators, they have the same reduced density matrix. We'll define it to be two blind. Okay, so a two blind Hamiltonian H prime. Okay, so now we have this mapping. We map the n particle states onto the reduced density matrices, and we'll map the n particle Hamiltonians onto the reduced Hamiltonians. Okay, so if the two blind H prime has a unique lowest energy reduced density matrix, then that density matrix is an extreme point of n representable density matrices. However, if we have the entire degenerate ground space of H prime mapped to this one point, then that one point is extreme but has multiple pre-images. So then we can translate Erdahl's conjecture into the Hamiltonian language that there's no two-blind fermionic Hamiltonian. Okay, so now that we've translated into the Hamiltonian language, let's provide let's show a simple two-blind Hamiltonian. So this is just the 9-bit Bacon-Shor code. So we have three by three qubits all in a grid, and we have these as the gauge generators. Given any Hamiltonian of this form, or, I'm sorry, given any subsystem code of this form, where the gauge generators are either Z operators or X operators, we can write down a Hamiltonian that's just a sum of the gauge generators and be guaranteed that the ground space is stabilized by all the elements of the stabilizer group. Okay? So now this Hamiltonian has two ground states. Each of the ground states is stabilized by the stabilizer group. So the parity of each column is conserved because you can only flip two spins in each column. And each of the columns have the same parity. So we have one ground state where all of the columns have an even number of ones, and another ground state where all of the columns have an odd number of ones. So how do we prove that they're indistinguishable? Well, we can write down logical operators. And let's say you have a two-body measurement that you want to make that you're hoping will determine which of the two states it is. Okay, so you tell me which of the two qubits you want to measure. I give them to you, but then I can always write a logical operator that acts on the qubits that you haven't measured, that you don't have access to. So let's say if you wanted to determine whether or not it was C0 or C1, and you ask for these two qubits, I could apply the X operator to flip it from C0 to C1, and you'd have no idea because you don't have access to those qubits. So you can do the same for superpositions using the Z state. Therefore, we have a two-blind spin Hamiltonian. Any questions?
When you do this sort of construction on a subsystem code, write down Hamiltonian.
Yeah.
It's certainly true that all the ground states have to be code words. But do all the code words necessarily have to be ground states, or is that just something special to this case?
Well, not everything that's stabilized by the stabilizer group has to be a ground state. But you'll always have the ground states being stabilized by the stabilizer group.
I guess there's lots of things. I mean, in this case, you have a two-dimensional code space.
Yeah.
And that also corresponds to your ground space.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, of course, what you do with the gauge qubits will matter a lot for the energies. But
mm-hmm.
But is the statement that the ground space is always the same size as the code space? I mean, the same.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So this kind of, for every code word, there's a ground state.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly one. Okay. Any other questions at this point?
All right.
So now we have our two-blind spin Hamiltonian, and now we'll map it to a two-blind fermionic Hamiltonian. Okay, so the way we do this is we'll first map states, spin states, to fermionic states. So the way that we do this, instead of having a system of n spins, we'll have n fermions at n sites. So each fermion can be at one of n sites and also has an internal spin degree of freedom. So we'll map each direct product state to a Slater determinant. So for example, we'll map spin 1 up, spin 2 down into fermion with spin up at site 1, fermion with spin down at site 2, .. And now we can Fermionize operators in the same way. So, for example, sigma z on site j gets fermionized into destroying a fermion at site j of spin up, creating a fermion at site j of spin up, and then doing the same for spin down with a phase flip. And then sigma x goes to destroying a fermion of spin down, creating a fermion of spin up, plus the opposite. So you can see that the fermionized operators have the same exact algebra on fermionic states that the spin operators had on spin states, or at least fermionized states that have exactly one particle per site. So I'll let you verify this. Okay, so now we want to fermionize this Hamiltonian. So we apply the mapping of operators on every two-body term in the Hamiltonian. And now because the algebra is the same, the ground states of the fermionized Hamiltonian are just the fermionized ground states of the original spin Hamiltonian. Since the original spin ground states can't be distinguished by two-body operators, and there's a corresponding algebra between the fermionized states and the original spin states, that means that the fermionized states also can't be distinguished by two-body fermionic operators. So now we have a two-blind fermionic Hamiltonian. It gives an extreme point with multiple preimages, and therefore, we're done disproving the conjecture. Any questions at this point? All right. Oh, yes. Oh, how does it affect?
So
it turns out that because we can. Okay, so I've done a little bit of a cheat here. So I've swept the fact under the rug that that there are also states in this Hilbert space where we don't have exactly one fermion per site. So what we actually need to do is we can add. Is there chalk? Okay, so we have a. Nj equals a dagger up j up a dagger j or a j up plus a dagger j down a j down. Okay, that just tells you how many fermions are at site j, and we wanna restrict ourselves to the subspace where n sub j equals 1. So all fermionized spin operators conserve particle number at each site, so they commute with n sub j. So the way that we ensure that there's exactly one particle per site is we'll just add sum of uj nj minus 1 squared. Okay, so when nj is equal to 1, this penalty term does nothing. When nj is not equal to 1, this penalty term raises the energy by uj. And therefore, we can ensure that there's exactly one fermion per site. So is the question? Yes. Nj is a one body because it's the sum of products of one creation operator and one annihilation operator. So Nj squared is two body. Any other questions? Okay, so what's the connection to quantum coding theory? I guess everybody here knows quantum coding theory. Okay, so if we want to encode a qubit into a set of code words, and we have a certain set of errors that we believe are possible, and we want to be able to correct an error without disturbing the encoded state. So the criteria for a quantum code to be able to do this is this. So two errors can't take one code word to another code word, and we also have this other criteria here. So if we're on a model where we have only single bit errors possible, then that means that ELEM gives you a basis for all two-body operators. So when ELEM is an arbitrary two-body operator, then this criteria is exactly the criteria for a state to be indistinguished, to have the same expectation value for all two-body operators. So the reason why most codes don't give counterexamples to the conjecture is because most codes don't form the ground space of some two-body Hamiltonian. So a code that doesn't form the ground space of some two-body Hamiltonian will just give you an interior point or a boundary point with multiple pre-images, not an extreme point, because it's not the lowest energy state of any two-body Hamiltonian. Okay, so the original conjecture was for m-body reduced density matrices, and it turns out the same discussion can follow pretty much verbatim. We can define an m-blind Hamiltonian, fermionize it in the same way to give counterexamples, and the ground space of an m-blind Hamiltonian is a code space that can correct m over 2 errors. Any questions at this point? All right. So what are some future directions that we can take this? Well, we have these two blind fermionic Hamiltonians, but they're sort of very different than what formed the intuition for Erdahl to make this conjecture in the first place. So, you know, most fermionic Hamiltonians in an atom or whatnot will have this form of minus the Laplacian plus some potential. On the other hand, our Hamiltonian has no Laplacian term. We just stick each fermion at each site, and we don't allow them to move anywhere. So the question is this a necessary property for it to be two blind? Can we make two blind Hamiltonians, which do have this Laplacian component? Or is adding the Laplacian component sort of a deal breaker? So we show that there are far more extreme points. They're much more varied than what was originally believed. But we still can't write down any more general classes. So the question is, can we find a better class of extreme points to do variational studies over? Another possible direction is in holonomic quantum computation. Okay, so let's look at adiabatic evolution from the perspective of n representability. So we have this Hamiltonian, which has a lowest energy density matrix, okay, and we slowly evolve the Hamiltonian to go all the way around in a circle. And the density matrix follows it all the way around in a circle. And at the end, we've picked up some phase. This is when there's unique pre-images. So while we've picked up some phase, it's sort of boring. There's not much we can do with the phase. However, let's say if extreme points have multiple pre-images, now when we do the same evolution, at the end, we started off with this pre-image, and we have now the other logical state. So the question is, can we do universal holonomic quantum computation this way? Maybe sort of a better understanding of the extreme points and these phases associated with them will yield fruit in some way. And then this is the direction that I've been taking it more. So how can we make make quantum codes from two-body Hamiltonians? So, well, some people have worked on that here. So the Bacon-Shor code we can define on arbitrarily large lattices, and we can show that the ground states are stabilized by the stabilizer group, but we don't think it's gapped. What I've been working on most recently with Benny Yoshida is trying to make a two-body Hamiltonian, which gives you a gapped, which is gapped, gives you a quantum code, and is exactly solvable. So we know exactly what unitaries to do to move anions around or do other operations. So I'd be happy to talk with people about that later. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Everybody's good? Thank you.